there's nothing new under the sun, but the internet really shines a light on that. And the fact that everyone out there that's successful, for the most part, that I've run into is willing to help. If you just ask the right questions, you get the most helpful answers for free. And these people will let you come to their shops and tour their shops and understand certain business principles that you're trying to wrap your head around at the time. And it will speed up your growth and your journey so much that it's like cheating and going to the front of the line or having a cheat code, because you don't have to make the same dumb mistakes. When you decide to do that and put your pride aside and do whatever it takes to do the thing the right way, the efficient way, and the profitable way, your ego can still be a part of that, because you're going to succeed, and not because you were too embarrassed or too dumb to stop and ask for directions, because everybody out there wants to help. It's really an interesting phenomenon that I've discovered on my journey, that everyone is willing to help. And the effect of that is, in the last 12 months, our business, I like to call it dog years, right? Our business has progressed in a dog year in 1 year. In the last 12 or 13 months, we have done, has to be the equivalent of 7 years of growth and getting to that point.
The Blue Collar Voices Show.
The answer to the last trivia question is Lake Itasca in Minnesota, which is formed by a variety of streams, which empties into a small stream. This point is considered the beginning of the river.
Uh-huh. Terrific. I'm Bob Slidell. This is my associate, Bob Porter.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Bob, why don't you go ahead and grab a seat and join us for a minute or two. You see, what we're actually trying to do here is we're trying to get a feel for how people spend their day at work. So if you would you walk us through a typical day for you?
Yeah, great. Well, I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door, that way Lumberg can't see me. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
Yeah. I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working. I do that for probably another hour after lunch, too. I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Peter, would you be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more?
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something about TPS reports.
Howdy, everyone. Welcome to the Blue Collar Voices Show. Today's show is part two of the conversation with Billy Klein. It's been a very good conversation so far, and I hope you are enjoying it. We're going to pick back up where we left off. Now, back to Billy Klein.
I know, as crazy as it sounds, that you can learn how to run a business by listening to podcasts, but at the time I had nothing else, right? I had no other influences. I wasn't reading books at the time. I found Tommy's podcast, and it was amazing to me, just the people he had on, the things that I was learning, the books that I was being exposed to. So I started reading books and listening to Tommy's podcast. And the first book that I read, and the first book that I recommend anyone read that's in business, is How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's a book that will teach you how to get favor from people, how to do sales, how to just generally communicate with people. It's a very, very important book. And it was written by Dale Carnegie, I think, in the 1920s, and it's still applicable today. But that was a very foundational book. And I've read hundreds of books since then. I listened to a lot of books. Each book would bring me a little bit further down the way, right? Mm-hmm. What a lot of people don't realize is that they have, I call it Car University. I'm stealing that from someone. I've heard that before. But you can learn. You can get an accidental PhD in business by driving around in your car, listening to podcasts. There's so much good stuff on YouTube now, very instructional, very specific stuff on YouTube, that if you don't know the answer to something or how to do something, you go to YouTube and find three videos on how to do it perfectly right now. And I did that. I realized that I didn't know my numbers. I realized that I needed accounting help and all these things. So I started putting all those pieces together. The first step on this journey was realizing that I didn't know what I didn't know, and it was okay to ask for help. Once you start going down that journey, it opens up Pandora's box, because it really does turn into a lifetime trip. Because when you kind of start getting some traction and understanding things and some success, you realize that you can get that success to a plateau, retool, get a little bit better, and then take off from that plateau to go to the next plateau. When I realized that this whole journey and whole process can literally take you to the end of your life as long as you live, then you have to make sure you have the right mindset for that, right? And I realized that I didn't. When I tore down my mindset and rebuilt my mindset to go on this journey, that it was a journey and not a destination, and that success wasn't just a number in your bank account, that success was just enjoying your life and always striving to do better and always chasing a goal that is relevant to you and reaching that goal and going to the next goal. That's the meaning of success to me. Success, a lot of people think, is financial, but what I think is that the financial aspect of it is just a scorecard or a way to keep score. If you are happy and doing something that you love to do and moving in a direction that you're happy about, raising a family, if you have a family, or finding the meaning of your own life and all in what you do and being bought in, to me, that is success. I could die today not having reached the pinnacle of where I'm going, but knowing that I'm on my journey, where I'm supposed to be, with the people I'm supposed to be with, my family, with my wife, and all those things. If I fall over right now, I've been successful and lived a happy, productive life. And to me, that's success.
That's pretty good. That just makes everything else just icing on top.
It gets a lot easier. I think earlier we were just chit-chat, and I said that business isn't easy, but it's simple. I grew up around a lot of poor people, and my generation was raised by a generation that was raised by a generation that went through the Depression, right? So scarcity 100%. Was a real thing back then, and that bled over into my parents' generation. They were raised by people who didn't know where their next meal was coming from. And a lot of times, my parents' generation didn't either. Their backs were still, relatively speaking, against the wall for survival, especially in blue-collar America. During the 70s and 80s, with all the crazy inflation, stagflation, President Carter era, all that stuff was a very tumultuous financial time. You go and buy a house back then, the interest rates were in the high teens.
Mm-hmm.
To say all that, to say what we're going through now isn't necessarily generally different than what they went through. It's just in a different era and packaged up differently. Back to the mindset piece, I was raised by and around people who were raised by people who didn't have a lot. So whenever you hear that costs too much, or it's not worth that, or you can't do that, those people weren't really willing to take chances because they were fighting for survival. Most people go through life playing the game to not lose. I posted this on Facebook earlier. You can play the game to win, or you can play it to not lose. Two wildly different things. And I was brought up by people who were playing the game not to lose. They thought that was winning, and that's okay. We made it. We made it through that. But I realized a couple years ago that after I read a book, I read a lot of books. I read a book by Weldon Long called The Power of Consistency. I would recommend that book up there early on in any entrepreneur's career, blue collar. If you want to do more, read that book. It'll make you dig deep into who you are and where you come from. In that book, he talks about the reticular activating system, or the RAS. There's a lot of books that talk about this. Your RAS is something that is in your brain. And when you see something, and then I'm going to mess some people up here. Every day we drive down the highway. One day you may happen to decide you want to buy a new car. Let's just say, for illustration purpose, it's a blue Volkswagen Beetle. Well, you didn't think about those until you went to look at them. But now when you're driving down the highway, you start seeing them everywhere. And they were always there. You just never noticed them before. That's your reticular activating system. And this ties in here because when you're young, your reticular activating system is also tied into what you hear. So we have to be careful telling our kids certain things because they grow up and subconsciously they don't realize that they carry this with them. And that's what happened to me. I went to buy some Vans for my business and they were $20,000 more than I had paid for them 2 years earlier. And I left there thinking they're not worth it. There's no way I'm going to pay that for it. They're just not worth it. But after a few days, I realized that the extra $20,000, if you break it down, it was going to make the payment around $1,000 a month for these Vans. And the amount of sales and revenue I wasn't going to get because the Vans weren't, to me, worth $1,000 a month was ridiculous. And when you think of it like that, were the Vans worth it? Yes, they're probably worth it at 10x the price a month, right? So I realized then that I had a small mindset. I was being small-minded, grown up with this parasite, and I had to shed it. And when I did that, man, I was off to the races. Quit thinking about things in terms of cost and started thinking about things in terms of value. When you have the capacity to do that, it will change your financial future. It will change your outlook. It will change the way you look at opportunities. It's really liberating.
That is phenomenal. And so how many years have you been operating under that newer vision of life?
About 3 years or so, 2 years. As we start getting closer and closer to where we're at in the journey today, it starts to speed up my story and the speed at which things are coming. I had rebranded my company in 2019 before COVID. I just started understanding and wrapping my head around all these things. I knew that we needed a new website, but I didn't want to do a new website with our old brand. And I couldn't build a website until we had a new brand. So I reached out to a fellow by the name of Dan Antonelli at Kick Charge Creative. And Dan talked to me, and I had joined some groups on Facebook. Let me back up just a little bit. These Facebook groups with a lot of heat and air and plumbers and stuff like that. Because what we do through entry doors and stuff, there's no best practice groups, right? There's no general, like plumbers and heat and air, they have NextStar and ACCA and all these things that they can get in. And these organizations, if you pay them a fee, they will literally give you the manuals and operating system to run a business.
Okay.
If you're not in the holy trinity of contracting, plumbing, heat and air, or electrical, they won't let you in. So I started joining all these Facebook groups with all these contractors just so I could try and learn just anything that I could get. I had such a voracious appetite for learning business and business principles that I was trying to get it from any of these places that I could. I was in a Facebook group. Actually, it was a couple big things in my journey that these groups did for me. I learned about Service Titan. I'd been on House Call Pro, which is a decent platform for smallish businesses. You can look way more organized with that than with nothing, right? But I learned about Service Titan, and we got on Service Titan, which is a very powerful CRM. You can manage all the things. We can go into that later. But I learned about Service Titan, and I learned about Dan Antonelli. And Dan has a business where he helps people create brands that stand out in your community, make you look more professional, make your average tickets go up, and all these things. So I reached out to Dan. He gave me a quote. It was like $16,000 or $18,000 to do a new brand, and it was going to take them several months to get to it. And this is another place where the cost of something almost cost me everything, because I was like, holy cow, that was a lot of money.
Does sound like a lot.
Yeah, it wasn't worth it to me at the time. So bought a couple new bands. I was going to have my local rap guy try and do it. Well, they sent me back some stuff. They asked me a few questions on what I was thinking, and I sent them a picture of something I saw on the highway, and they sent something back, and I'm like, all right, I understand now. You get what you pay for. So it was horrible. It was atrocious. Not that they necessarily were doing a bad job. They just didn't know what they were doing when it came to branding.
Their specialty was rapping.
Correct. So I went back to Dan. I'm like, all right, whatever it is, I'm going to make it work. And Dan worked with me and created some options for us. And we picked the one that we liked the best. I don't know if any of you when listening is familiar with Dan's work, but he does amazing, phenomenal, beautiful work. He understands so many things so deeply that it makes it a lot easier for us to close sales, get in the home, just have a brand that stands out, things like that. he delivered it to us. The brand helped us get everything fit to the trucks. And then the same wrap company did a good job wrapping the trucks. And they were actually really impressed by the brand too. We love the brand. So once I paid for it and once we had gotten going, had a couple quarters under our belt and I had some time to reflect, even at the $15,000 it was a lot to me at the time. I started to develop the attitude of like, holy cow, I ripped Dan off, right? The amount of value they brought back to us was exponential, having a professional brand and a professional image that at the time, the money, and it still is a lot of money, but at the time, it's a lot of money when you don't have any money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on the value that that brand delivered to us, it was worth it at 10 times the cost, bigger picture. And sometimes it's hard to separate yourself when you're small and you don't have the knowledge of the future or what these things are going to bring to you other than what you're hearing people talk about in these Facebook groups. I've since become connected and well connected with a lot of these successful business owners from these groups and understand a lot of these things a lot better now. I brought up Tommy's name earlier. If Tommy told me, hey, spend this money on this thing and this is going to be the outcome, I would blindly do it now, because guys like Tommy and some of these other guys that are running these bigger companies, they've already blazed the trail and we don't have to make the same mistakes anymore. In the age of the internet, there's nothing new under the sun, but the internet really shines a light on that and the fact that everyone out there that's successful, for the most part, that I've run into is willing to help. If you just ask the right questions, you get the most helpful answers for free. And these people will let you come to their shops and tour their shops and understand certain business principles that you're trying to wrap your head around at the time. And it will speed up your growth and your journey so much that it's like cheating and going to the front of the line or having a cheat code, because you don't have to make the same dumb mistakes. When you decide to do that and put your pride aside and do whatever it takes to do the thing the right way, the efficient way, and the profitable way, your ego can still be a part of that because you're going to succeed. And not because you were too embarrassed or too dumb to stop and ask for directions, because everybody out there wants to help. It's really an interesting phenomenon that I've discovered on my journey, that everyone is willing to help. And the effect of that is, in the last 12 months, our business, I like to call it dog years, right? Our business has progressed in a dog year in 1 year. In the last 12 or 13 months, we have done, has to be the equivalent of 7 years of growth and getting to that point, to the point to where I don't even have to go in. I work from home today. And if you want to call it work, I did some emails and directed a few things. But for the most part, we've developed a team, a culture, systems for my people to do their job without me having to be a part of that. And it's really what every business owner should strive to get to. And then once you can do that, then you can start to scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I look back from where we were 3 years ago, I never thought we would do $1 million in sales 3 years ago. Now we're well beyond that. Next year, we're knocking on 8 figures.
That is crazy.
It's crazy, but it's just really a matter of, if you boil it down, stripping everything away and making sure you have the right mindset. And then once you have the right mindset, then you figure out what the cornerstones of business are. Having a marketing and branding, right? If you're going to be in it for the long term, you've got to build a brand. Your brand becomes the most important aspect over time. Early on, it's hard to understand that because you still need to spend money on branding, but you don't get anything back from that. It's like planting a crop. When you start to invest in your brand, you're planting those seeds, and the harvest is going to be down the way, but it becomes perpetual over time, and you have to spend less money on your brand, and then it's a lot easier. Marketing and advertising costs go down because you have a household name or a strong brand. Brand being a cornerstone, systems and processes being a cornerstone, and then sales. So, and fulfillment. Once you realize that, business becomes a math problem then. Getting good accounting principles and solid books and all the things where you can know if you're priced right, know if you're making money. For a long time, I didn't have good books. I thought I was priced okay, but we were always just right on the edge of not having enough money still. And when we got our books fixed, I realized that we were almost breaking even, like losing 2 or 3%. And you can go for a long time like that if you don't know that you're losing money and feel like you're doing okay, but mm-hmm. You're dying a slow death. And once we got our books fixed and started pointing that in the right direction, it was a lot easier to understand we're not making money here, or we need to do more here or do more here. And that's where Service Titan kicks in with all the analytics and reporting that it gives you to be able to make these decisions on when to pivot or where you need to charge more or whatever. Service Titan is super, super powerful. It's relatively expensive, but if you tie it in as a line item on your P&L and look at it that way, it's relatively insignificant. It should come in way less than a percentage point on your P&L over a year's time. When you're writing those checks, though, it doesn't feel that good. $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a month for a CRM seems like a lot. But when you start getting these strong reports back telling you that you need to tweak some things or double down here, you know, we can do reports by zip code to see where we're getting the most, the biggest tickets, right? And we can double down our marketing efforts in those zip codes because those people value our service more. It starts to get simpler, not easy, but simpler from there. It's become a lot of fun.
When you are increasing your marketing or you're charging more, how are you selling these people that, or is it even that significant what you're charging? They're just wanting the service.
Yeah, so there are a lot of people that will do it for a lot less than what we do it. And this goes back to what we had talked about earlier in the customer service, right? So we have to deliver. We're not the most expensive, but we are premium. We offer a premium service. We charge more for our actual services than a lot of people would for the same commodity, if you want to call it a commodity, right? So our ideal customer is a busy professional who values their time more than their money. And what we do is we try and keep this as seamless as possible, as clean as possible, as quick as possible, and as professional as possible. That way we don't waste any of their time. And they're happy to exchange their money for that time that they get to hang on to. Of course, we get the whole cross-section of the buying public, you know, that call us and want our services. But another important principle that people need to understand is not everyone is your customer. I'm in a couple of Facebook groups, and these guys are always on there asking for advice on quoting, or they'll share screenshots of a customer that thought they were charging too much. Problem with that is, they're not providing an experience to go along with what they're charging. There's a group that I'm in, and the founder of this group is telling people they need a 50% gross profit. Wholeheartedly agree with that, right? At minimum. But the problem is these people haven't developed the systems and processes or the customer service experience to back that up, right? You have to deliver not only on a promise of fulfilling the obligation of doing the work, but you have to deliver an exceptional service experience with that. Mm-hmm. You have to answer the phone when they call. You have to take care of warranty issues when they call. You have to be organized and deliver a good product and all these things. And all that comes with that added money and the higher gross profit in your revenues. You can afford to do these things. So you can't just charge more to make more. You'll make more when you provide this customer service journey and you give these people an experience that they've never had. That's my goal, is when I come to your home, I want to blow any other contractor away that you've ever worked with. And we do this on the front side of our sales process too. We send people some information. We send them a quick video to watch about who we are and how we work and what to expect. And what that does is it creates an expectation in that customer's mind, whether they hire us or not. The guy that comes in behind me to quote this work is never going to live up to the expectation we've already set in that customer's mind. So it gets us a lot of work after they've already gotten two or three quotes. Even if we're higher, the people show up, they're unorganized, they don't show up on time. If they're running late, they don't call. All these things add up to that customer's experience. And like I said earlier, they may forget what you did for them, but they'll never forget how you make them feel. So That's all part of that customer service journey. And customer service is impossible to commoditize. It takes a human touch. It takes a human element. It takes empathy. It takes understanding. It takes 100 elements that are all tailored for that certain customer at that certain time for them to appreciate that. That's hard to sell sometimes. It gets easier when you realize that not everyone is meant to be your customer and not everyone appreciates a relational. There's some stuff out there. Half your customers are transactional. They only care about the price. And then half of the customers are relational. They care about the service they get. They care about if you're protecting their home when you come in their home. They care about if you clean up. They care about if you're insured, if your employees are background checked, drug tested, all those things. If you show up, if you've never, ever had anything worse than showing up at somebody's house and your truck leaks oil on their driveway, you go in and you do a good job when you make some money, and then they call you in a couple of days, and then you got to go spend a bunch of money to have their driveway professionally cleaned. So those are the types of things that you don't get when you provide excellent customer service and a price point that costs more, but we deliver. And that's how we justify what we charge. We deliver. We over-deliver. We outrun anyone from an expectation standpoint, and we try and educate our buyers, our customers, keep them informed along the whole journey, along the way. The bar is set so low in home improvement right now that most people think that the minimum standards is just showing up, getting it done, and a favorable outcome. They don't realize that all these other things are even a thing. So when somebody shows up and blows their socks off, it's pretty easy for them to refer us.
Your referrals must be out the roof.
Referral and repeat customers for the first quarter of the year was probably 35 or 40% of our revenue for this year so far. I was very happy to see that. It stood out to me.
So you talked about having a team that takes care of things. You also have guys that are out doing installs. How many, and you have the shop where you fabricate. What would you say your current employee count is?
So we're around 22 or 23 right now, including myself. The revenue target we have for the year and for the new marketing and things like that that we're getting ready to start doing, we're having a new website built. We expect we'll probably be 35 or 40 by the end of the year, or somewhere in the fourth quarter, first quarter of next year as we ramp up. And then to hit our revenue targets and our growth goals, we kind of know how many employees we need to have to hit a revenue target. And next year, we're going to try and do 10 million. So to do 10 million, we roughly need 40 to 55 employees. We're going to try and do that to get to that goal for next year. We're building out our own training programs. We've had great success bringing in young people as apprentices and training them to do the things that we do. You know, the bar is pretty low there. Just a handful of things that we ask for. Have a driver's license, which seems pretty rudimentary, but you'd be surprised at the people that show up for an interview and they don't even have a driver's license. Well, we can't put them in a van, right? So that takes them out immediately. Mm-hmm. And the other is to be able to read a tape measure, to have some sort of mechanical inclination to where, you know, at least an eighth of an inch, how to read a tape measure. That hasn't been as big a hurdle as seemingly as getting people with the driver's license. But once we get them in, we develop such a good culture and treating our people so well, we pay them really well, that it's not hard to keep them on our program to where they go from apprentice to junior tech and then to tech and senior tech. We give our senior techs a clear path to making six figures or $100,000 a year by performance pay, right? So it's relatively easy to hit if you're on top of your game and some of these things. We pay them extra for reviews. Every time they get a five-star review, any person's name that's mentioned in that review gets $10. So if you look on our reviews, almost all of our reviews have some technician's name in it. And then at the end of the month, whoever got the most reviews gets an extra bonus. I think it's $200. So that keeps the guys on their toes, doing a good job, asking for reviews, stuff like that. But it gives them an extra opportunity to make more money. And when younger entrepreneurs or less mature entrepreneurs reach out to me and ask me for guidance now, even my people, when I hire someone, I always tell them, this is where we're going to start you at. What you make from here after we evaluate you and after you're part of the team is up to you. I will always pay you for the value that you bring. So you need to figure out how to bring more value. If I pay you $300,000 this year, I hope I do, because that means you have brought an immense value to the organization and your team, and you earned it. You deserve it. And I tell that to entrepreneurs, the market will always pay you. The world will pay you for what it values. So if you bring value to the market or value to the world, that's how you get paid, not by just doing the things, right? Anyone, you have to decommoditize whatever it is that you do and present and deliver some sort of value to your employer, to your employees, to the market at large. And if you can figure that out, it's really the secret to success in business. Deliver value to your internal customers, which are your employees. Deliver value to your external customers, which are your customers, right? The people who are paying for the thing that you do. And if you can do that, over time, you will win.
What does your training look like for an employee?
Just like everything else that I've talked about today, there's been a learning curve for me, right? It's not enough just to do training, but you have to segment it and get specific on all these things. So one of the things that I didn't realize was important, we were having an issue with turnover for a while back. It was onboarding, right? If you don't onboard these people when you bring them on, you just throw them out there with Chuck, follow this guy around, he'll show you what to do. When we started onboarding our people, the attrition or the turnover went almost completely away. And spending time with them, explaining our work philosophies, our vision, things like that. And I can talk about vision a while too. Onboarding our people, showing them what to expect, how to raise their value. We give them the tools. We give them the training to make themselves more valuable, how to increase their paycheck over time, what those benchmarks look like, and give them a clear shot. I've got a 19-year-old kid. I think he's about to turn 20. He's been with me for a little over a year now. He was homeschooled and came to us right after he graduated from school. This kid is sharp. And by the time he's 25, I promise this kid's going to be making well over $100,000 a year. It's given these people that vision in their lives to see how to get there and give them a path and training them along the way. So some of the training we do specifically is for our technicians. Of course, we teach them how to do the things that we do, right? We've built out books and manuals and videos on how to do the actual widgets, right? But the training for us is more important to me on the customer service aspect, training the soft skills, communication with the customer, body language, site protection, treating the customer's home with respect, communicating at the end of the job, all these things. Those are all things that most people don't associate with fixing a door, but they're really the most important aspect, bigger picture, because at the end of the job, if you don't go to the customer and explain to them everything you did, then they call back, they've got problems. Well, this could have all been avoided by showing them how to work the flush bolts or the deadbolt or explaining to them why this is this way instead of just doing it, getting paid and leaving. And now I got to send you back out on a deadhead to waste 2 hours just to drive out there and back for nothing that could have been done. So training our people on all these little things from a customer service aspect is really one of the more important parts. The technical training, like I mentioned earlier, we have stages. We have apprentice, junior tech, and senior tech. Senior techs can do round or radius millwork, knowing how to cut it, install it, things like that, measure it. Techs generally don't know that yet, but they know enough. You can send them out to do most installs on their own. They can troubleshoot most things pretty good. Junior techs, a lot of times, can install a door okay, can do most repairs, but they're not going to know how to do radius molding. They still may need some help with troubleshooting. You can send them to do weather strip, jam replacement, stuff like that. And then, of course, an apprentice is going to come in and have to learn all the aspects, customer service aspect, the terminology, making sure that they have everything they're supposed to have, cleaning up aspect, loading the trucks. There's 100 things that the apprentices need to know. By giving them that picture from apprentice to $100,000, what that journey looks like for them. I mean, we start our apprentices out at $20 an hour. If you know how to read a tape measure and show up on time and have a driver's license, we literally start them at $20 an hour. It goes up from there.
That's pretty good. And it's showing them that you value them.
Correct.
Would you prefer to hire somebody from scratch or somebody that already has knowledge in the industry?
Oh, man, how much time have we got? I have been there, done that, and I have the T-shirts to prove it. We call them retreads, right? Most of the guys that have been in my industry anyway that have been around for a while that know a little bit about what we do, they do the widget fairly well. As I've made a big point to say that our deliverable is actually customer service, though. they are generally hard to get on that bus. They don't, a lot of times, appreciate being corralled. They're kind of focused on doing the thing, getting a paid, moving on to the next one, and less on all the soft skills or the peripheral things that need to be done to button up a nice customer service experience. We've had fair success over time. I think I've got two guys with me now, probably out of 20 in the last 2 years that I've tried to hire that were experienced that are with us now that I feel like we can grow with. Outside of that, man, we've had the best luck with apprentices. I mean, they come in, you get a guy that's 18, 19, 22 years old that's been working in a warehouse or fast food or whatever, making 12, 13 bucks an hour, and you pay him $20 an hour to show up on time and learn. I mean, that's like life-changing for a lot of kids, you know, or young people. And to give them the vision or the approach to show them how they're going to earn more over time, it's pretty rare in the marketplace right now. Most businesses are revenue generated. And of course we are too, but at the end of the day, we adhere to our core principles and customer service. And it allows us to charge a little bit more for our service. It allows us to pay our people more, who in turn come to work happy because they can pay their bills. I have literally had 7 people in the last 12 months, young people, close on their first house, buy their first home. That, to me, is as big a win as having a record sales year. That means more to me because that means that those people trust and believe in me enough to do that for their family, to go out and put their neck on the line to buy a home for their family. That means that they're bought in to what we've got going on. And that means that as a leader and as a visionary, and the culture that I'm building is sufficient and above and beyond for these people to be able to do that. And it really is a big thing to me. So to answer your question, I prefer young people over retreads.
All right.
Put this out. I say this all the time. And this goes back to that RAS, I think. I'm 45, and a lot of people from my generation and older, we all grew up with people saying, kids don't want to work. No one wants to work anymore. That's what we hear all the time. Everywhere you go, I promise, if you leave where you're at and you go to a job site and ask anybody if they're hiring, they're like, yeah, we'll hire anybody, but people just don't want to work anymore, right? Promise, we all hear that. What I have found to be an opposite of that is true, that there's just as many people in the workplace that need to take care of their families, but people work for different reasons now than they did when we were 20. Right. I'm not sure how old you are, but when I was 20, going back to that raised by people who were raised by people who went through the Depression, during that era, you had to work. It didn't matter what it was. And if you didn't want to work, there was 6 more guys lined up there to take that work, right?
100%.
It's not like that anymore. And a lot of people that are running businesses now are running the businesses off of that old mentality, and they can't understand why. And the problem is you really have to do like what I did and tear your business and your mindset down to the bottom and start from scratch and build it up from the bottom up, because it's super hard to just change your culture one day to get people to stick around. Well, you got to pay them more. Well, you pay them more, you got to charge more. And to charge more, you got to know what you're charging in the first place if you're even making money. Everything's connected. And that's why people say, what's the one thing that you did in your business that just turned it all around for you? And the problem is there's not ever just one thing. It's 100 tiny things all bolted together that make a big thing. And it takes all of it. That's why it's hard just for anyone really ever pinpoint one thing that turned it around for them. That mentality in business that no one wants to work anymore, I would challenge that, because 70% of our employees now are under 30 years old. Everyone that's under 30 years old is bought in. They show up on time. They go above and beyond. But that is because of the culture we've put in. You know, our people, our customers too, our team members, our employees. I don't like to call them employees. They're our internal customers. And if we can cater to them and make them understand that we care about them and we want them to win, it's not, you know, I tell my people all the time, I don't need you to do more so I can have more so I can buy another vehicle or another house. I want you to win too, because this ship, the rising tide is raising this ship, and I want you to win. Tommy says this, and I tell my people this all the time. My dreams and my vision have to be big enough for theirs to fit inside. So we all get to win. If you want to send your kid to private school, I will sit down with you and help you figure out how to deliver the value to where you can afford that. You want to buy a a house, whatever it is, my people are just as important to me as the customers that we serve. It's such a important formula that if you value one over the other, or if only one of those is important to you, you're not going to make it.
Today's trivia question is, which weighs more, a pound of bricks or a pound of feathers? Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Blue Collar Voices Show. On this episode's page on bluecollarvoices.com, you will find show notes and any relevant links. If you are not subscribed to get notifications of new show episodes, you can do that at bluecollarvoices.com as well. Hey, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. See you next time.
I'll be back.